Yeah, we're going to go on and talk about some of the good things that happened in 1972. And then I did want to read you from the Pentagon Papers again, the way the government covers up things when they're caught, and show the parallel to the way they covered up being caught in the office of the Democratic Party this week, because I think that has serious implications. I barely mentioned the first of the show, and I want to get back to it. But this last year, with the mushrooming of FM stations and programs such as we have here, talk shows that go all over the country, and underground newspapers with marvelous articles. Even our local community now, The Nose, has come out with wonderful things. If you read every word of it, you'll learn a lot. It's an opportunity for just a quarter to have your hands on a lot of material that's coming out. Through the process of duplicating machines and memos, electronic surveillance of watching them like they watch us. It's a two-way game. If Richard Nixon and Kissinger send notes out and the White House sends notes on the ITT deals, somebody can intercept them. And it's a whole new ball game, because as much as we worry about surveillance or wiretapping our phones, there's always a chance that one of our people, one of the people, when I say our, one of the people that wants to tell the truth, it doesn't have to be any political line. The men that I mentioned, Marchetti and Hebert and all these, Tagwood and Ellsberg, one comes from Harvard, one was brought up in the streets of New Orleans, you know, as a poor child and been in jail as a convict and no job opportunities. All walks of life are getting their thing together, and truth is the commodity that I hope will come out and that will free us from this slavery, that we actually are a repressed people, because persons running the government do not represent the entire United States. They represent a handful of families, a handful of people. And to free ourselves from this oppression, which you feel, the oppression of all of your tax money going to kill other people, and you can't free yourself to even help them. You don't know which way to turn. And there's a lot of things coming down that are very ugly, and you have control of those if you get access to the truth. And if you hear something that is said and you believe it, pass that information on and try to turn other people on and work together. And keep your eyes open for these people that are risking their lives. And to tell you the truth, Larry Shears was arrested yesterday, on the informer who told about the plot to kill Chavez was arrested for carrying a loaded weapon on a public street. We have to follow that to see if they're out to get him now, to put him in jail for disclosing the way the Treasury Department works.
He was convicted yesterday, actually.
He was convicted of carrying a loaded weapon.
Not arrested yesterday.
He was convicted, which is a maximum of 6 months in jail. Now, what will happen to him in jail if he goes there? Was this evidence planted on him? You see, will they pick up Tackwood, Larry Shears, Martinez, the conspirators use ex-convicts, people out on narcotics charges or on drug raps or for stealing cars or any other thing. James Ray was an ex-convict, and they can use these particular men because it's easier to bring them back and keep them if they're ever, if they bungle their job. When the Pentagon Papers came out, there was a discussion on the killing of Diem and the coup, which I mentioned, on how to cover the killing, not the killing, but the overthrow of Diem without being noticed. And I thought I'd just share that with you, because these are the tools, if you understand the tools and methods by which conspirators achieve what they want to achieve, then when they repeat their job and get caught, you'll recognize the bungling cover-up. Because August 24th, it was decided in Washington, the National Security Council, that they would bring about Diem's replacement if necessary. So Pentagon paper number 37 says that the memo says that the concealing of the overthrow of Diem, the American official's hand should not be shown, that they should use Lieutenant Colonel Conine of the CIA as the middleman, that Conine would convey the points down the line, that the orders would come from Washington or the help, and Conine would be the general to receive the information, but he was CIA. Then he would meet with General Don, one of Diem's own military men, and the Vietnamese would arrange the coup, and Conine would be the middleman. Pentagon paper number 40 says the timing and the management, managing announcement should be to minimize the appearance of collusion. That they should minimize their appearance. Pentagon Paper 49 assured Big Min, that's one of the generals in Vietnam, through Conine, that the U.S. will not thwart any plans. They will review their plans, but they won't thwart any plans other than assassination. They didn't intend for Diem to be assassinated, but he was, the minute he was in their hands, he was assassinated after the coup took place. Pentagon Paper number 50 is interesting because John Kennedy was in on this coup, and 3 weeks later, John Kennedy is dead. And he sends a memo directly to Vietnam, and he urges that the covert effort be with the closest security, and the identity be hidden, and alternative leadership be ready to take over. Effort should be made, John Kennedy said, for total security and fully deniable. In the event that they're caught, it has to be fully deniable, separated from normal political analysis and reporting that the military overthrow of Diem and his brother-in-law, Mr. Nu, should not come in any other messages, that they should have their own separate messages so that it's deniable. They were to issue all instructions only orally in order to provide plausibility to denial. Now, people say to me, how can you prove? Have you seen the paper that gave the orders to kill Kennedy? Kennedy is saying everything has to be done orally to provide the plausibility of the denial. And he said to Henry Cabot Lodge, all reports are to go to Mr. Lodge alone, from Washington to Saigon. Orally, he writes, to you alone, Lodge, and so that will be provide plausibility and deniability, John Kennedy said. Now, the White House sent a message October the 6th, Pentagon paper number 51, that they want to avoid being drawn into the last minute reviewing or advising on the coup because that might tend to identify the U.S. too closely with the change of government. And in order to preserve the security and deniability, appropriate arrangements were made with other follow-up contacts. They were most concerned with the security problem, so they confined the knowledge of the coup within only a small group of high officials in the White House, the State Department, and the CIA, whom the message would be cleared through, because, you see, if too many people were in on it, it couldn't be deniable. Pentagon paper number October 25th said there would be a close relationship with General Don of Vietnam and Lieutenant Colonel Conine of the CIA. They were thinking of a cutoff man, a in-between man, a designee for General Don, so that Conine, at the last minute, wouldn't be associated with the coup. I'm going over this very slowly, how the machinery, these are printed in the Pentagon Papers, that they have planning for months the coup against Diem, but we will have a cutoff at as of October 25th between the CIA so that they don't time into Don. Now, they say, in the event the coup aborts, you remember that we will have it within the realm of plausible deniability that is perfectly prepared. The government is prepared to disavow Mr. Conine, to disavow Conine at any time it will serve the national interest. Now, that means that their agent, through all these arrangements, Mr. Conine of the CIA, is to be the go-between between the generals in Vietnam that are going to overthrow the government. But they have the arrangements to make it perfectly deniable, to disavow Conine at any time that they want, that it'll serve the national interest. Now, this is important discussion, and if you want to go to the library and copy those pages or buy the Pentagon Papers, people really should own these books and support the people, even the New York Times, because they're telling you something, and you should get behind them and own these books and study them. That Conine all along is to be the middleman, but any time it serves the national interest, they will deny him, that they don't even know the man. You see, plausible denial. They will disavow Conine if the coup fails, but they will work with him up to the moment it takes place. This is what the Pentagon Papers says. Okay, Henry Cabot Lodge says to George McBundy, October the 30th, this is 2 days before Diem is killed, Pentagon Paper 57, we will say this is a Vietnamese affair, and they will tell Diem of this. If they get caught, they will tell Diem about the traitors. Now keep your hands off and monitor and press for detailed information. The best generals are involved. This is what Lodge is telling the National Security Council. The best generals are involved, and Conine is going to meet with Don the night of October 30th, that night. The CIA man will meet with the generals, but you see, they're going to deny that they know Conine in case they're caught. They have the deniability. They'll sacrifice him for national security. And there will be a limited contact of Conine and Don after this night, because 2 days later the coup is taking place. Now, Lodge says he'll take a military aircraft out instead of Pan American. He's switching his... He was going to get out of town, but he didn't manage to get out. And if there's leaks to the press, he will cover his story, and he has his getaway story printed here of how he will leave Saigon, Henry Cabot Lodge. And he said, I will offer space to a group for emergency leave of the soldiers, and that will allay further suspicions and handle this as a routine matter. You see, the press then will say Henry Cabot Lodge, as a routine matter, was on this military plane taking troops home for emergency leave. They print their cover story in this book. And if my program or discussion each week is of any value for people, it's to understand the methods, the language which the conspirators use. And when you get it printed in a book, it's understandable if you read the Tackwood thing in the Nose this week, if you read the Pentagon Papers, or many of these books that I keep giving book titles about. Read the language that they use, not that I make up, and you see how they cover their stories. Now, they said, if the case they ask me, or General Harkins, to call off the coup. General Harkins was the general representing the United States who was against the coup all along. And it... In case they asked him to call it off, they will not. They said, our story will be, we can't call it off. That Mr. Lodge has made a deal, you know, and planned ahead of time. If they call me, I will say, I can't call it off. That you're the commander in chief, and I don't know what to do. I can't call off the you're in charge of your army. I can't call it off. So Lodge had his story all covered. Then he said, the Pentagon paper said, we're going to need extra money to buy off opposition, send money, because some of the generals were loyal to Diem. So the American taxpayer money will have to go swiftly into the hands of the generals who are opposing the coup, or maybe who will speak up. They're going to give money to those generals really quick. And then if coup fails, the message says if the coup fails, somebody will blame American complicity, and we have to say that we had no part in it. A miscalculation could jeopardize all of our position in Southeast Asia, and it's a big risk, but we're going to go ahead and do it. Now, the Pentagon paper number 59, dated November the 1st, Diem calls Henry Cabot Lodge, and he says there's a rebellion outside the palace. What is the attitude of the United States? And Lodge says, I don't feel well enough informed to tell you. It's 4:30 in the morning. He's been planning this for months. Diem says, but you have some general idea. I've tried to do my duty. And Lodge says, well, you certainly have done your duty, and I admire your courage. No one can take that away from you. And I hear there's current activity out there, and they've offered you and your brother safe conduct. And Diem says, do you have my phone number? And Lodge says, yes. If I can do anything for your safety, physical safety, call me on the phone. And then Diem was taken off, and he was murdered in a truck. Pentagon paper 59, November the 1st, is the conversation of Diem with Lodge. Pentagon paper number 60 is 3 weeks later. Kennedy is dead, Diem is dead, and Johnson has given the order in Pentagon paper number 60 for covert and clandestine agents and armies to begin the war in Laos. 3 weeks later. This is the anniversary of the exposure of the Pentagon Papers. It is a positive step forward if you use it. It's a tool out of the trap. Wilhelm Reich talks about the traps people are in. If you use this, it is a tool out of the trap. Because from February to August, at the time of the Tonkin Gulf, was when the clandestine armies were planning the escalation of the war in Vietnam from February. Kennedy was dead, buried the first of the year, and they were to begin escalating. Now this week, when they bungled the getting caught in the Washington office of the Democratic Party, Mr. John Mitchell came out with his cover stories, and he had his usual, he couldn't say that we know these men and they hired by us and so forth. So he has his cover stories, and I broke down the information of this break-in into the contacts these men have into the White House, who the men who were arrested, how they got into the actual hotel, and the denials. Now, the denials are interesting. Mr. Mitchell and came right up and said, Mr. McCord and four other men were not operating in our behalf or with our consent. Now, this is the way the Pentagon Papers read. They denied Mr. McCord right away. Who was Mr. McCord in his dinner suit and his rubber gloves? He was a former CIA agent. He was the chief salaried security coordinator for Nixon's reelection committee. He had a contract to provide the security for the Republican National Committee in Miami. He worked 19 years with the CIA, lived in Rockville, Maryland, was on the payroll of through May 31, at least, of this particular private investigating firm, and then with the Republican Party, April and May, he drew large salaries from the Republican Party. He was the chief of security at the Central Intelligence Agency at Langley, Virginia headquarters. That's who he is. They're denying that they are they had any responsibility with this man. He had an alias. He worked as Edward Martin, and he was a former FBI radio specialist and Central Intelligence Agency. There's something very important about this that ties in with Lee Harvey Oswald. When I say Lee Harvey Oswald was in the CIA and the FBI, CIA in Europe, Navy intelligence, 3 years in the Marines, and worked with the U-2 flight and the Navy over in the Soviet Union, and FBI in the United States, people don't believe that you transfer the agencies back and forth. James McCord did, and so did Oswald. The Mitchell said, McCord was not operating on our behalf. And then he went on to say, McCord has a number of business clients and interests, and we have no knowledge of those relationships. That is plausible deniability, because they looked up the private investigating firm of Mr. McCord in Maryland. He has no license for wiretapping. It isn't listed as a regular investigating agency. It has a different name. He's violated every law. It has a phony list of directors. His sister-in-law, the directors, were himself and his wife, Dorothy Berry of Houston. Mrs. Berry, an oil company employee, told the reporter that she and McCord's sister knew nothing of the company. She didn't know she was listed as a director. In order to have such a company in Maryland, you have to have three directors to be incorporated. This wasn't incorporated. It was listed as a business services studies analysis in connection with business, industry, and academic institutions. The company is not licensed to perform security services, and it's going to do all the security at the Republican convention in Miami. And it failed.
This information from was printed in the Los Angeles Times.
Yeah, Wednesday, June 21st. And it also failed to file any 1972 income tax with the state. It's a security private agency that's been in business 2 years, that has no income tax, no board of directors, no license, and it's an academic institution. And with all of Richard Nixon's clearances and checking out, he uses the man who was in charge of the entire security of the CIA at Langley,
At
the Langley headquarters to take care of his election security in Miami.
It does make you wonder a bit. It's another one of those that makes you wonder a bit.
Then there is another thing that I'm going to throw out, because I've described past assassinations, Phil, and predicted future. I think this could very heavily tie in with my theory that Nixon was going to be killed. You see, there's a group of people that do not like Nixon's policies, and one group are the anti-Castro Cubans, who did not invade Cuba the past 4 years and go after Castro. And William Buckley and family are for Ashbrook. They don't like Nixon. And it seems that the man responsible for hiring Accord came through William Buckley and Richard Helms through a Mr. Hunt. And that Buckley is tied into a chain of command here. If it's guilt by association, you give it any name. But it's interesting that the anti-Castro Cubans and two Democrats were in this office. And I'm just playing around with the idea, and by next week I'll maybe do one whole show on the real meaning of the breakdown of these men and the cast of characters, who hired and their aliases and who they were, because I have it all here and there's time's running out. But
do you think these guys intended to be caught? It seems awfully dumb of some people who would, you know, break into the Democratic National Headquarters to bug it and then end up getting caught by the Capitol Police.
No, I don't think they intended to be caught. You see, one of the top men in charge of security at the Watergate Hotel, and that's where John Mitchell lives, don't forget, and these men, Mitchell is running Nixon's campaign, and these men were hired for the security of the Nixon campaign. One of the men who guards the security at that hotel went to bed that night and was ill and conveniently disappeared, and they're looking for him because he didn't guard the door that should have been guarded. And who does Mitchell know? Who do you know at that hotel who has the guard get ill and just turn away the night that these guys break in? But there's a very serious kind of possibility that I'm thinking about, because I did say on one of the shows during the year that the motive for killing Nixon in Miami would be an anti-Castro Cuban. I'd have to look up which show that was up. And, you know, it was one of these where I said that they have to always have a patsy, and this would make sense in Florida, that because he didn't invade Cuba at the time of Bay of Pigs, they would do it. This man also was in charge of the entire Bay of Pigs operation, too, that one of the men that was arrested at this hotel. But what you could do, you could get Democrats, two of these men were Democrats from Miami, into the Nixon office talking about killing Nixon, and have the tape recording come from the Democratic headquarters that there were plans to kill Nixon. And they could be sitting in that room talking about that. If Nixon's killed by an anti-Castro Cuban, you would tie it in, just like they tried to say that Oswald was a communist and killed John Kennedy, when actually the anti-Castro Cubans were involved. But you could twist this to get, just like the Berrigan thing was a fake, trumped-up thing to get them on a conspiracy trial. Anderson had an article this week about how it was contrived and faked to lock them in and hope the jury would believe it. It would be possible to get a tape recording from inside the Democratic headquarters of some so-called, in quotes, Democrats talking about killing Nixon, where the anti-Castro Cubans have planted the devices and their agents are sitting there to cover their involvement a second time. I know they were involved in killing John Kennedy. So they could kill Nixon if they wanted to escalate the war in Cuba and take over for the gambling interests and the syndicate. Richard Helms and Buckley, and there's a bunch of high-up people that are connected with the men. The cast of characters briefly involves Mr. McCord and Al Wong. He's the head of the Secret Service. This is another thing that makes me worry about Nixon's life, was he was the head of the Secret Service Technical Security Division, and he hired Mr. McCord. So the Secret Service, that is in charge of protecting the president, hires anti-Castro Cubans to protect him in Miami when the anti-Castro Cubans were involved in killing Kennedy. And Nixon hasn't invaded Cuba. And I wonder, are they setting Nixon up? Now, Mr. Wong can't be reached to see how long he was with the Secret Service. See, that's another problem, is how long was he there? Because the man in charge of protecting John Kennedy was only with the Secret Service just a very short time before Kennedy was killed. Instead of bringing in an old-timer who knew all the tricks, and Texas was the most dangerous place to be, they had Lawson of Secret Service, who was chief of Secret Service, who had barely been there since Kennedy was president. He had just started. A Robert Bennett, the son of Senator Wallace Bennett from Utah, has a dummy campaign committee, he admitted, after this arrest, to raise money for the re-election of President Kennedy. He has a public relations firm. And two of the people from his firm that worked for him were in that hotel bugging the offices of the son of the senator from Utah. Senator Wallace Bennett, his son, has an office, which is another phony office. This is how the CIA, the method they work. He has an office of re-election of Kennedy, which he turns out is a dummy committee. There's so much in the paper about the funding of the Republican Party, where the money's coming from. Douglas Caddy is one of the five men worked, and he's a lawyer for the five men that were caught, and he's the liaison between Bennett's office. Well, we're going to summarize. Phil tells me it's time to summarize today's program. What I've really tried to say, it's the anniversary of the Pentagon Papers. And I hope by now that everyone who's listening for a whole year to these shows or on and off has bought the papers and read them. If you haven't read them, read how the government plans overthrows or changes of government. If you read nothing else, read the planning of the overthrow of Diem. Then you know how your senator or president is killed. You read the language and you know how the system works. Read the notes and read about TAC with the conspiracy from the national down to the state level to the criminal conspiracy section. And read your newspapers on the articles of the breaking into the Democratic office. There's going to be a lawsuit, and this is going to continue. And just I'll close with one letter I got from Germany from Mr. Wiesenthal. He looks up old Nazis, and I still think Kissinger's a Nazi. And I got a letter back that he says, I believe you made an error. As far as we know, Mr. Kissinger certainly is Jewish. Still, as a child, he came to the United States from Germany, which by then was already under Nazi power. And he never denied his being Jewish. I didn't say that Kissinger denied it. I think he's using it as a cover. He said, according to my conviction, there's no possibility that Henry Kissinger is a Nazi. I'll just wander completely right-wing and say they still have some more work to do. The fact that he says he's a Jew doesn't mean he's not a Nazi. He came over here not as a child. He came as a young adult, and the next year was in military intelligence for the United States and back over in Germany. And I worried his family was written up in the Chronicle recently as having a lot of possessions they brought over from Germany and furniture and apartment of their German possessions. And the year he came, you didn't bring those things out of Germany. So I just wondered how he got here. But we covered a lot of territory, Phil. It's an interesting time, and there's just so much happening that it's hard to wind it all into one thing. It all has to do with conspiracies, right?
Right. You've got a lot of information there. If you got any questions, you can write Mae Brussel. That's who's been speaking. Mae Brussel, political research specialist. This has been Dialogue Conspiracy.